Good morning, little Saigon, Seattle. Good morning, all my friends and neighbors and fellows in Christ. It is Sunday, almost 6 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and this is the virtual church of Little Saigon. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening, you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, 'Come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling.'" While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked toward the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God." That evening, quail came and covered the camp. And in the morning, there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Everyone is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Then Moses said to them, "No one is to keep any of it until morning. However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Each morning, Everyone gathered as much as they needed, and when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, 2 omers for each person, and the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, "This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning." So they saved it until morning, as Moses commanded, and they did not stink or get maggots in it. It did not stink or get maggots in it. "Eat it today," Moses said, "because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any." Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out." So the people rested on the seventh day. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed and tasted like wafers made with honey. Moses said, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Take an omer of manna and keep it for the generations to come, so they can see the bread I gave you to eat in the wilderness when I brought you out of Egypt." So Moses said to Aaron, "Take a jar and put an omer of manna in it, then place it before the Lord to be kept for the generations to come." As the Lord commanded Moses, Aaron put the manna with the tablets of the covenant law so that it might be preserved. The Israelites ate manna 40 years until they came to a land that was settled. They ate manna until they reached the border of Canaan. This is Exodus 16, 1 through 35. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Good morning. Good morning. What can we say on this Sunday morning? The President of the United States, according to what we've been told, is sick. He has the COVID. I don't know what that means because I don't really think there's a pandemic. I know that this is a service, so I'm not going to get into that. Everyone has a right to their feelings and their opinions on this. But I fear we're being lied to more often than not, and I think it's worth noting. I don't have a 501c3. I wouldn't want one. So I have no fear of speaking my mind. And I do think there is something to be said that in times of trial and difficulty, what we need more of than anything else is truth. So if you sense a sarcasm, please accept my apology there. I don't intend it as an attack. This is a time of peace. This is for the Lord. But also, we need to listen to the Lord. And I think that there's a message in Exodus 16 that we'll come back to. But there's a message for these announcements, and that is, the Lord wants us to be truthful and honest because times do become difficult, and we need to tell each other the truth. That is what I will say. I also learned an ephah is 35 liters. 35 liters. Did not know that. Did you know that an ephah contained 35 liters? And I think I looked this up because of the omer. The omer is 1/10 of an ephah. So I guess that would be like 3.5 liters, right? Indeed, one omer is 3.5 liters, and so the Lord said, "Take an omer and fill it with manna and save it for generations to come." Something to think on. as a reminder. Here's another reminder for the announcements. My email address is me, that's me at iamsully.com. If you want to contact me, you can go ahead and contact that email. I am equipped to trade public keys with certain versions of what's called open source or GNU PGP. I mention that because we're getting to a time where people are starting to consider encrypted email. And I'm not opposed to that, although we may be reaching a point in American history where it could become illegal to encrypt your email. And boy, that sounds great. In my announcements, I want to talk about something today that I think is not directly related to the core subject, but I just need to get it out there. And also, if you're listening to this, this is kind of a rehearsal. I try to do a virtual service every week, but this week, today, this morning, we're going to be meeting in Bremerton at 11 a.m. at Evergreen Rotary Park near the parking lot, Pacific Avenue entrance parking lot at 11 a.m., like I said, today, Bremerton. There's a link in the notes for this podcast, so you can look at that information. So that's what this is, but this is also a way for me to talk through something that I intend to talk about during the announcements, but I just don't know how to do it, so let me just get out of the way. When I was in graduate school a long time ago, I studied a horrible subject, military history. And military history is horrible. It's why I just don't give a shit anymore. I don't watch too many videos about war any longer. I can't really watch a movie about war. And what's really funny is I was never in combat. I simply served in uniform, peacetime army. But I guess the whole thing of war as a subject became really boring and sad to me about 20 years ago. Before 9/11. After 9/11, it got worse. But here's something you may not know. During the 1920s, the German government, the Weimar Republic, was under restrictions and controls with respect to military spending, weapons development, training, and total numbers of their army. The German army was restricted, I think, to roughly 200,000, maybe less, German soldiers, but don't get caught up in numbers. The point is, they were in restricted conditions. So what a lot of the German generals figured out very quickly, and this is a, you know, I think this reflects that Prussian tradition of militarism and excellence that if you believe in warfare, you can kind of tip your hat to. But if you don't believe in warfare, it's kind of monstrous. But the fact is, the Prussians, when it came to warfare, by the end of the 19th century, had actually perfected many of the things we still do today, especially when it comes to management and operations. You know, if you look around a military unit or a corporation, or much of society, what you're going to see is the Prussian model. And you know, for what it's designed for, which is to organize people to do terrible things, the Prussian model kind of works, in a way. But one of the things these German generals figured out in the 1920s, because they had a restricted military, they couldn't have an army bigger than maybe 100,000, I think. I think it was 100,000. They figured out that every single private, and if you don't know what a private is the lowest rank, right? Every single private needed to be a sergeant, and every sergeant basically needed to be an officer. What this means is because their military was so small, because they were under all these restrictions, they had to change their paradigm. They had to rethink what they were doing. Now, why am I bringing this up? This horrible thing to base an analogy on, every private a sergeant, every sergeant a captain. Because we are at a point in the history of the church, in my opinion, where pretty much everybody that is a Christian, a disciple of Christ, needs to consider the idea that they are also a minister. And that maybe these terms aren't even very useful. And maybe they never were. I mean, this is one of the things that comes up when people enter the world of Christianity, is that they enter it thinking that what they're seeing today reflects what was there in the first century AD, but that's probably not true. I'm not saying it's totally false, but what I will say is this. The big arena churches with the espresso stand and the other things going on in the atrium, I don't think those reflect the first century church. And the problem is, I think that's where we're at right now. So my request today in Bremerton, and my request to all of you, is the following. That moving forward, the virtual church of Little Saigon has every intention of trying to do at least one get-together, you know, Christian meeting. Let's call it a Christian meeting. We don't have to call it church. But to have one Christian meeting a month where people get together, you know, if they want to. But I think the real goal starting right now needs to be that everyone out there, and I think people are already doing this. God bless. God bless. This is already happening. People need to start meeting with their fellow Christians in people's homes so they can pray and they can sing and they can greet each other and they don't have to sign a document. They don't have to sign a document. You know, the other day, I went to the bank. You know why I went to the bank? I went to the bank because I needed to wash clothes. You know why I needed to wash clothes? I needed to wash clothes because I haven't been able to in months. Because usually I go to the grocery store and get quarters, but there have been no quarters. So the only way to get quarters to do laundry now is to go to the bank. And you have to sign a document that says you haven't been in contact, nor have you seen, nor have you been around the COVID. And this document looks eerily like a loyalty oath from the McCarthy period, back in the 50s. And I'm in this bank to get quarters to do laundry. So when I say I think things are different, or that we may have to think differently, this is what I'm getting at. We are in a situation where I believe the Christian church is under attack. And when I say the church, I don't mean the structures. I don't mean the buildings. Buildings can be replaced. My friends, my brothers and sisters, buildings can be replaced. And I don't mean the institutions. Institutions, they come around, they go away. So if you're an Episcopalian or a Baptist or a Catholic, God bless you, but the institutions are also not the church. The living church has always been the apostles of Christ, the disciples of Christ. That means you, and that means me. We're the church. We always were. It's like that weird meme with the astronaut. We were always the church. Yes. Yeah, we were always the church, folks. That's the reality. And we have to re-engage with that reality. And I think we have to have the courage to be willing to do a couple things. Number one, to be willing to accept the idea that church has to scale down and become more decentralized. I think that has to happen a little, which means we have to consider the idea, and I'm repeating this point, that we all need to be facilitators of the church, which means we have to have the courage to organize Christian meetings on a weekly basis, at least, at people's homes, wherever they can find private space, and so they don't have to sign a document that says, oh, I guarantee that I've never been anywhere where somebody might have had a virus that apparently mostly doesn't kill you. Or at least the evidence about it is so sketchy that I'm not sure what the truth is. Yeah, I don't think I want to sign that document. I want to pray. I want to worship. That document's not about God. That is my opinion. These are my words. I take ownership. I am not a 501c3. So if you're wondering to yourself, Dan, oh, don't you skirt the line and talk about principles as they apply to society? I kind of think Jesus wants us to do that, actually. Look around. The absence of that, the vacuum, is what we're facing today. That's why I'm basically telling people that if you want to keep the church alive, you're kind of going to have to, you know, I'm not going to say go underground, but in a sense, you're going to have to re-engage with the church of the first century. And do I fully understand it? No. I'm still trying to understand. There is so much I do not understand. And I'm not even sure I have a right to minister. And I know when I say that, that is an expression of my lack of understanding. But I also feel that I am called just like you are called. We are called to minister to each other. We are called to protect the church. And the church is you, and the church is me. The church is us. Now Elijah the Tishbite, hope I'm saying that right. Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word." Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah, "Leave here, turn eastward, and hide in the Kerith Ravine, east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook, and I have directed the ravens to supply you with food there." So he did what the Lord had told him. He went to the Kerith Ravine, east of the Jordan, and stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening. And he drank from the brook. This is the word of the Lord. 1 Kings 17, 1-6. Thanks be to God. This is a prayer for sanctuary. Lord in heaven, each day we are faced with the trials of this world. Each day we are confronted with desperation, sadness, fear, anger, emptiness. Lord, when your people were in the desert, you did not abandon them, despite their ungrateful nature. Lord, when your prophets feared for their lives, running from their own people, you did not abandon them. Your love has no limits. Lord, I pray this day for myself and my brothers and sisters in Christ that you can lighten our burden, even as we are chased through the wilderness. I pray, Jesus Christ, that you remind even the most stalwart and hardworking among us that this battle before us, this battle of all time, since the beginning of time, might not be over tomorrow. This battle may last generations. The burdens might never go away. This life has always been hard. But Lord, because of your love, this life is joy and beauty, and there is rest for the weary traveler in your arms. Lord, you are the eternal blessing and our sanctuary. Amen. On the third day, a wedding took place in Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, oh boy. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet." They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, "Everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now." What Jesus did here at Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. This is the word of the Lord, John 2, 1 through 11. What is Dan going to talk about today? Because that's a good question. I hate these words I use. They don't express the meaning. I felt inspired about a month ago to do a service in Bremerton, and then I canceled it. Wow, Dan, wow. And I didn't cancel it out of fear, and I didn't cancel it for any other reason, but I just didn't have the energy. I didn't have the connection. It's hard to explain. I didn't feel it. And then a week went by, and I thought about it, and I said, I need to not give up. If I give up on this, it's wrong. I feel like Jesus wants me to not give up, just like he doesn't want you to give up. And so, okay, I think about it and say, well, maybe Seattle again. Maybe Everett. Maybe Tacoma. Maybe a beach someplace where we can look out at the sea. Yeah, maybe. But instead, when I thought about it, I ended up back at Bremerton, and I really don't know why. I don't believe necessarily that it means anything. It probably is just the simple fact that I am trying to, well, I'm trying to do what everyone else is trying to do, grope my way through the darkness and find a path. That is where we're at sometimes, right? But you're wondering, what am I going to talk about? You feel like 2020 is a carnival ride? Do you feel like 2020 might be the worst carnival ride in the history of carnival rides? And you look at the carny in charge, and I don't mean the Lord in heaven, I don't mean Jesus Christ, I don't mean God. I mean the earthly carnies in charge, these characters, these cronies, these crooks, these people that are quote-unquote in charge of the earth, the temporal realm, the people that run our lives or think they do. And you look at this carnival ride we're on, and you say to yourself, how do I get off? And then you open up the newspaper, and it says, the Center for Disease Control is determined through science The CDC has determined through science that Thanksgiving is bad for you. Hugs are bad for you. Shaking hands are bad for you. It's bad for you. Human dignity is bad for you. Smiles. Unobstructed smiles. They're really, really bad for you. But Thanksgiving. And you say to yourself, okay. They're going to cancel the Halloween, and they're going to cancel everything, and they're going to screw it up. But they're going to take away Thanksgiving? I mean, even for those of us who carry grievances from the previous year, okay? For those of us that have all kinds of issues with brothers and sisters, they are canceling Thanksgiving. Guess what's next on the list, folks? Christmas. You ever think to yourself you're on a carnival ride right now and you just want to get off? You just want to get off. You just want that crazy carny that's smoking a cigarette and the cigarette is hanging off the corner of the mouth and they got a bottle of whiskey in the other hand and every once in a while they check the rusty dials, you know, that monitor the hydraulic pressure for this dangerous, crooked, rusty ride. And you just want to get off. There's an old saying, no rest for the wicked. And it's funny because it's similar to a Napoleon quote I often toss about like I did yesterday with my friend Mike. There are many things you can do with bayonets, but you can't sit on them. So there isn't any rest for the wicked, but what does that really mean? I don't really know. One interpretation could be the following, that the path of evil is so tenuous by its nature, so opposed by God, so inherently destructive and unstable that you're constantly off balance. So you basically, all you can ever do is run. All you can ever do is run for the devil. I didn't say from the devil, I mean for the devil. That is the path of the wicked. But is there rest for the righteous? And the answer, maybe the easy answer, and in some ways this is the medieval answer, is yes, Dan, there is rest for the righteous in heaven. Well, I agree with that. I mean, there is the eternal rest in heaven, but I don't think we really know what heaven is until we die. Like, I know that there are many theologians who will tell you or describe heaven, and there are theologians going back through time who will describe heaven. And there are writers like Dante and others who will describe heaven and hell and places like that. But until you die, you really don't know. You don't know what hell is. You don't know what heaven is. You don't. I don't know. I've seen movies. I've read books. But you tell me. My question is there rest on this earth for the righteous? Now, some of you out there are going to say, Dan, what are you getting at? And I'm not there yet. Almost there. Think about the chosen people in the desert. Think about the act of faith involved in that. Because what you're basically doing is you're taking hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of people into the desert for 40 years. When you leave Egypt, you probably have just enough food for a couple days. Maybe a couple days. By the seventh day, if you don't have a source of food, you're in a lot of trouble. By the second week, things are really bad. And so I'm not going to beat up on the chosen people, say, why were they grumbly? They were grumbly because their kids were hungry. They were grumbly because their situation was terrible. They were upset because the fact is, as great as it was, that they escaped the Pharaoh, and it was great. Their struggle had not ended. And boy, is there a lesson in that. But in all that, the Lord still provided if they kept their faith. In all that, the Lord still gave them bread, still gave them sustenance. One of the toughest things for me to do as a Christian is to accept the idea that God provides for me. I'm not saying God doesn't provide. I just don't really think it's for me. Because I always think to myself, well, I'm just too bad a person. I've screwed up too much. I spent too many years as an atheist. What I probably deserve is what I have or less, or a lot less, right? So one of the biggest hurdles for me as a Christian is to accept this idea that God does provide. And it's not always obvious how this works. If you think that the Lord in heaven works in obvious ways, then I would suggest you read more of the Bible, because actually there's great mystery to what God does. A lot of mystery. Now, a person will say to me, Dan, these are dangerous times. Dangerous, dangerous, scary times. Dan, these might be the end times. Yes, indeed, these might be, in fact, the end times. I don't know. I don't know. I really don't know, folks. I don't know. I wish I understood more. I know I've been talking to some friends about this subject because it is part of my Christian faith, and that is eschatology, the end of things. And I don't fully understand. It's a mystery to me. Okay, but what I do know, and I've known this since I was 10, at least since I was 10 years old, is everybody dies. I will die one day. I could die tomorrow. Everyone dies. If the great struggle of your age is this question, can I physically live forever? The answer is no. And I know that there are scientists and engineers, guys like Ray Kurzweil, who say, but the answer is yes. They're selling a lie. They're selling a sham. They're trying to tell you that there is this Velveeta that is just like natural cheese. Ray Kurzweil's selling Velveeta, folks. Jesus is selling real cheese. Do you want Velveeta? Or do you want real cheese? Velveeta or real cheese? Good question. And I still can hear you say, Dan, what's your point? I don't see what you're getting at. I have to chop 20 cords of wood. I'm getting there. Times are tough. It could be the end times. I don't know. I also know that every day can be the end of my life. And what does that mean? Well, you can open up Ecclesiastes, and these days I find my fingers heading towards Ecclesiastes more often than not. But here's the answer I want to give today. This struggle with evil has been since the beginning of time, at least human time. This struggle with evil has been with us since Adam and Eve were so unceremoniously or ceremoniously kicked out of Eden. The battle with evil isn't going to end today, and the battle against evil won't end tomorrow or next year. Bad times have always been around. I do think these times we're in are exceptionally bad in a lot of ways. I do believe that. But there have always been bad times. There have always been times of struggle. The Bible is filled with this. What I'm going to tell you is something that a lot of people have a hard time listening to, especially parents, especially people taking care of kids. And what I'm about to tell you is going to sound like a freebie, and it's not. I'm not going to try to sell you crap. People do that too often. But in order for you, as a parent, to keep being there for your kids, a mom or a dad, in order for you as a boyfriend or a girlfriend, in order for you as a brother or a sister to be there for the people you love, every once in a while you need to have the faith that you can take a break. I know, Dan, that's so profound. You're basically saying I can take a nap, I can sleep. It's not profound. It might be the thing that a lot of people need to hear right now, because this thing we're in, whatever it is probably not going to end today or tomorrow or next week. It's possible they cancel Thanksgiving. It's possible they cancel Christmas. It's possible they try to cancel our lives. And yet what I'm telling you is what the Lord in heaven tried to say repeatedly, over and over again, for those 40 years in the desert, I have your back. That's what Jesus is saying. That's what God was saying. That's what God is saying. I have your back. Yes, these are difficult times. Yes, you probably have to work more than one job, maybe. Yes, you're worried about how you're going to feed your family. I don't even know how you're going to do that. I don't. But I do know that through faith in God, I am saved. And I do know that through faith in God, we are saved. And I do know that God provides. And I'm not advocating for sloth, if you're wondering. I'm not advocating for laziness. I will tell you something. Sometimes, especially the last 10 years, there are times when I throw up my arms. And I won't do crap for anybody. I won't do anything. And some people would call that laziness. Others might call that sloth. And at times it was. And at times it is. It is mostly my only form of no I have left. And that is no. I have my own feelings about the way things work today. And participation in it. And I used to believe I at least had the choice to choose poverty and to choose my own principles. But even that choice is being taken away soon. I'm not advocating for laziness or sloth. I'm advocating for the idea that there are people out there right now who depend upon you. And maybe you need to, I don't know, step back, take a break, allow some of the burden to slip a little. I don't know. Maybe put the burden down for a bit. Figure out a way. Because this is not going to end today and it won't end next week. And we need you. For as long as the Lord in heaven has it planned for you, brothers and sisters, to be on earth, especially you, the folks out there that work the hardest, that never give up, we need you most of all. So what is the point today? Well, one of the points is you can lay down your head. The Lord in heaven does have your back. God will provide, even in the darkest of times. God does. And before we leave this subject, let's talk a little bit about Elijah's ravens. The ravens in the story, I mean, according to my faith, are real. But the ravens, in terms of our lives, are not always ravens. Sometimes they're just people we don't even know. Sometimes Elijah's ravens are people we just met. Sometimes they're friends. Sometimes they're family members. Sometimes they're people we know and they want to be anonymous. But if you're asking the question, Dan, by what miracle, given that I don't have food for my family, by what miracle, given that I don't have a shelter or a cover for my children, by what miracle shall I be helped? By what miracle can I lay down my weary head for a second, Dan? How can I stop paddling without drowning? And that's a good question. That's a fair question. And the miracle might be sitting right next to you. The miracle might be a stranger on a bus. The miracle might be the fact that we do have the support of God, but ultimately one of the ways that this support manifests itself is in each other. That miracle. The miracle that there are generous, decent people in this world who, if you say, brother, would you be willing to watch my kids for an hour? Sister, can you spare money for food? Father, are you willing to help me out with some cash for rent? Mother, can you listen to me for an hour? I have something I need to talk to you about. There are strangers, there are neighbors, there are family members who in our lives are like the ravens of Elijah. So if you're asking, can I lay down my head for but 1 second, Dan, without drowning? My only question is, where is your faith? Because there are people in your life, in all likelihood, who will stop that from happening if you simply have the faith in God and the faith in them. And if you are so alone that there is nobody out there for you, then I still say pray, because Jesus is still there. Always was, always will be. There is sanctuary in Jesus. There is prosperity to the extent that it is part of the plan. There is goodness. There is peace. There is joy. There is food. There is shelter. There is life, both here on earth and forever in Jesus. But you have to have the faith. And the good news is, if you grumble, it seems to me God is okay with that to a certain extent. The good news is, even though we're not always that good at asking for help, or even necessarily being thankful or understanding that we got it, God is still there to help. At this moment, I would like to ask everybody to take a moment to think about people in their lives who need some help. And maybe the help they need, the help that they really need, is someone to say, lay down your head and take a rest. This battle will not be over today and it won't be over tomorrow. So lay down your weary head. Let's take a moment of silence for those people in our lives that need the prayers and the help of Jesus Christ and the brothers and sisters and disciples of Christ. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Brothers and sisters in Jesus, go out this Sunday, this day of rest. If this is your day of rest, some people have to work on Sundays. Let's just keep it real. But if you can find a moment to rest your head, do not feel guilt in doing so. If you can find a moment to put your faith in God and not worry too much, try to do that. Try to take that burden today that you're carrying and give it to Jesus. I'm not saying it's easy. I don't have kids. I don't have any responsibilities but to stay alive at this point. So I don't really know that it's my business to even say it's easy to unburden yourself. But on this Sunday, brothers and sisters, if you can find a way to rest your weary head, God has your back. And there are brothers and sisters in Christ who also probably are there for you as well. May you go out and be good and kind and peaceful. May you be dignified and free. May you walk in the light of God forever. God bless all of you, and in Jesus Christ's name, amen.